So, summer is here, and we're going to look at the character of God and how God interacts with the creation, how he reveals himself to us, his creation. And so look at these moments of his intervention, these moments where he particularly reveals himself in the story that he is telling, the story that he's telling through our lives and in our lives. And so you get to know someone through conversation, through spending time with the person. That spending time together allows you to know that person, how they act, how they think, how they will respond to specific situations and the type of jokes they find funny and so on. And it's the same with God. His character is known by interaction, by conversation, by spending time with him in prayer, in his story, in journeying with him. And that's how we encounter him and get to know more about his character. And so it was great that it coincided, the beginning of this summer series, Anabaptism, because that's talking about how God breaks into one's story and celebrates a Christian journey. So it was a great opportunity to talk about how he is telling his story through our lives and being able to hear a story from Irene about God's involvement already at an early age in her life and in her journey. And these events are important. They're memorial stones. They are placements along our journey that we can call back and we can remember. And they should be remembered and celebrated in the life of our community. And so it made me think about remembering events or life-changing experiences. And one of the biggest surprises of my life would have been when I was in grade 5. I grew up in a northern mining community in Tumbler Ridge, British Columbia, and I wasn't exposed to musical theater in the small 2,000-person village of Tumbler Ridge. And I was a little hockey-obsessed, so I didn't really have any eye for the arts. We moved to Cornwall in grade 4, which I know you're thinking, Cornwall, it's a hotbed of musical theater. It is not, if you don't know where Cornwall is. But it's close to Montreal and Ottawa, which afforded the opportunity to experience more things. They're both about an hour's drive away. When I was in grade 5, the grade 6 class was going to Andrew Lloyd Webber's The Phantom of the Opera in Ottawa. And the day before they were supposed to go, there was two people who dropped out, or they had two extra tickets. So my grade 6 teacher was the one organizing the trip. My grade 5 teacher was the one organizing the trip. And she said, if you bring in your money, your permission form, you can hop on the bus the next day. If there's more than two people, we'll do a draw. And those who win the draw get to go. And I was fortunate enough to be one of the people who was able to go. And I wasn't thinking, oh, the Phantom of the Opera, this is going to open my eyes to something. I was thinking, it's better than sitting in my desk all day with a substitute teacher. So let's do this. And it was probably one of the most mind-blowing experiences I've ever encountered, because I had no understanding about what I was getting into. And I have vivid memories of the whole experience. I was sitting, like, equivalent to over there, close to the exit, and just being overwhelmed almost by what I was experiencing the whole time. And it was something that my eyes had never been opened to before. And since then, I can't go back to, like that place of ignorance. It was that kind of profound. And not that it... as I was preparing this message, I listened to an interview of the guy who played Phantom in the 25th anniversary at Royal Albert Hall, and he is Canadian and saw it at Pantages Theatre in Toronto and had a similar experience of being a hockey player and then seeing this, but then he went on to play the Phantom of the Opera, and I definitely did not. Raheem Carmelou is the guy's name, and it was kind of, I chuckled along when I heard that. Second fortunate incident is that there was tickets for a t-shirt, and I won the draw and won a t-shirt of that too, so it was a whole lucky experience. But what this t-shirt did was kind of something I could remember the experience by, and after that I bought the cassette tapes and the lyric book, and it was all to kind of remember this moment and being able to experience it kind of as close to again and again by sitting there remembering how awesome it was for me. And this is kind of how I remember memories sometimes. Like, there's these objects that trigger something in my mind about a good experience or something that was interesting, something that I can call back, and that those cassette tapes and those lyric books brought back those feelings. And still to this day, when I hear, like, the overture of the Phantom of the Opera, they kind of something triggers inside of me of that moment, that experience. And so I think that's similar for many people, how memories are brought back, whether it's a song, a book, a smell, a taste, a place, or a picture. I think that's how most people try to remember things now with Instagram pictures or selfies. But these kind of objects, these things, bring back memories, whether good or bad. And as Rob already kind of highlighted, in the Old Testament, they'd often build something. They'd build something with stones or an altar, and they did this to remember when God would reveal himself to this specific person, or when he would act in some way. And it would mark this experience or this moment in their journey and in their life. And so the Exodus was one of these key moments that they remembered, and they continued to journey along with God, even though they have to go through the wilderness. And then they come out in the story of Joshua. And we're going to look at Joshua chapter 4 mostly today, and the story of the crossing over of the Jordan River before they enter into the Promised Land. And I mention the Exodus because it's a callback to the Exodus as they experience anew God's intervention in creation. So we're going to look at chapter 4, 4 to 7, and 19 to 25. It's page 313 in your pew Bibles. Just a word of context, Joshua is the new leader of the people after Moses has died, and the people have wandered around for the equivalent of now 40 years in the desert, and it's now time for them to enter the long-awaited Promised Land. And this brings us to the story of Joshua, and he's already had an encounter with God where God confirms his leadership, and then they have to take that next step and move into the Promised Land. And there's a big waterway that stands in between them. And it's interesting to note, this callback to the Exodus, is that as they leave Egypt, they're forced to cross the Red Sea, or the Sea of Reeds. And it's this marking of leaving Egypt. And it's supposed to be a quick journey through the wilderness. But it's a marking of this point that God has redeemed them in the Exodus. He has brought them out of Egypt. And they're supposed to progress to the Promised Land. They cross through as a people through the Red Sea. And it's this callback as they now enter into the Promised Land that God then does the same sort of kind of intervention, the same sort of miracle to mark that they're making a new step, a step into the land of long-awaited promise. It's a confirmation that he is their God and they are indeed his holy people. And when I think back of stories and telling stories, I imagine that this crossing of the Red Sea would be a popular story. But now it's a bringing into the present for the people as they cross over the Jordan about the stories they've heard about this mighty God who brought them out of Egypt. So now let's read Joshua 4 to 7, and then we'll skip over to the end at 19 and 25. So Joshua called together the 12 men he had chosen, one from each of the tribes of Israel. He told them, "Go into the middle of the Jordan in front of the ark of the Lord your God. Each of you must pick up one stone and carry it on your shoulder. 12 stones in all, one for each of the tribes of Israel. We will use these stones to build a memorial. In the future, your children will ask, 'What do these stones mean?' Then you can tell them, 'They remind us that the Jordan River stopped flowing when the ark of the Lord's covenant went across.' These stones will stand as a memorial among the people of Israel forever." The people crossed the Jordan on the 10th day of the first month. Then they camped at Gilgal, just east of Jericho. It was there at Gilgal that Joshua piled up the 12 stones taken from the Jordan River. Then Joshua said to the Israelites, "In the future, your children will ask, 'What do these stones mean?' Then you can tell them, 'This is where the Israelites crossed the Jordan on dry ground. For the Lord your God dried up the river right before your eyes, and he kept it dry until you were all across, just as he did at the Red Sea, when he dried it up until all had crossed over. He did this so that all the nations of the earth might know that the Lord's hand is powerful, and so you might fear the Lord your God forever." The text mentions that this is a sign to the nations of God's power. And sometimes when you talk about talking to other people, it's actually talking to yourself. It's a remembrance that that God is indeed powerful. And in the context of Joshua, God has given them this land of promise, and they're supposed to push the nations out of this area. So it's a confirmation that God is indeed mighty and powerful, and he's going to fulfill this task that he has promised to do long ago. And the second part is that they might fear him. And this isn't this sort of a panic fear, it's a sign of reverence respect, knowing just how powerful this God that they have been joined in covenant relationship with is and how he's going to act for his people. This characterizes God as a mighty and powerful God, the one who is faithful to his promises, faithful to doing what he has said he is going to do. He's going to finish the process of redeeming them out of slavery in Egypt and bringing them to the land that he promised to Abraham so many years before. God knows that they've come to this juncture in the story, and they could suffer from unbelief, from confusion, from this time of long wandering and wondering about whether God was ever going to fulfill the promises that he made. So he does this mighty act to confirm all those things for these people. It's a remembrance that God is with them and that he will successfully bring them through this. When we consider the story of the people of Israel, it's clear that most of the trouble they got into, or all the trouble they got into, had to do with forgetting about his intervention, forgetting about his character, forgetting about the memorial stones that they had taken out of the Jordan River and put on the side to remember that he is indeed mighty and that they should fear and respect him. When they forgot who their God was, they drifted into rebellion. With forgetfulness brought neglect of the things that God had asked them to do. When they neglected to tell the stories and be able to answer the questions of their children about why the stones were there and why they do these certain things, then the people forgot their God and forgot his intervention in their story. The stones are supposed to be a reminder of what God had done in the past, but not just a view to the past, it's also a view to the future about God continuing to work as their God, continuing to work in the lives of his people to fulfill the promises that he's made. It's a sign of what God could do, or what God can do, what he will do, and what they can hope him to do in the future. It's the God of the past, the present, and the future in these remembrance of his mighty acts and deeds. So how does this characterize God? And it's because these items, these objects, are not just memories. It's a story because it frames the story of how God interacts with his creation, and that tells his story, that tells about who he is. His actions in the life of his community reveal who he is as God. And it's the same way that his actions in our lives and working in our life and in answering our prayers characterizes who he is and displays more of his character, his power, his might, his glory. These things were just stones in many ways. But they're both stones and not just stones at the same time. Pretty remarkable stones. But it's not just where they came from. It's the significance of what they point to as God is one who breaks into the narrative. They're supposed to point back into his mighty actions, his mighty deeds, in a remarkable way, and the moment of his intervention that needs to be remembered. They both look to the past and look to the future. And the stones remind the people that God is a God who can stop the waters. He's a God who fulfills his long promises. He's a God who doesn't leave his people wandering in the wilderness. He's a God who forgives their sins and rebellion. He's a God who dwells in covenant with his people. And these stones that they set up were supposed to point to all these characteristics, all these aspects of who he is and who he was going to be in their life and their journey with him. And this is how God breaks into the world and reveals his character. And it's similar with baptism. In its bare essence, baptism is little different than jumping in a pool or in a lake or even taking a bath at the end of the day with a little water over one's head. But just like the stones, it points to something far greater, something beyond comprehension, kind of the thin places of how God breaks into the narrative of life, breaks into our journey. It points to something far greater, far more significant, far deeper, and reveals something about his character and his story. Baptism speaks to how God has involved himself in the narrative of our lives to bring us into community, to bring us into fellowship with him. It's something wonderful to mark a point of leaving the wanderness and the wilderness of our lives and pressing in to the promises that he's given us. And it's important to set this opportunity, this event of baptism, as a remembrance that God has indeed saved us and redeemed us and is going to fulfill his promises in our lives. And it's important to have these moments set out in the course of our journey, because sometimes we are prone to wander again and again. But we need these memorial stones, we need these marks in our life to bring us back into relationship with him, into journeying with him, to press in and remember again that he is mighty, that he forgives sins, that he doesn't leave us wandering forever, that he dwells in relationship with us. Baptism is a time to hear somebody share their story and then remember our baptism, remember our journey, remember our commitment to follow in after him. So if this is something that you're considering, please, and you haven't experienced baptism yet, please talk to Rob, myself, or Carrie, and we'd be happy to explore that conversation with you further. And it's important to open up these opportunities at times of baptism to consider how God is moving in your journey. As a Baptist church, we have two sacraments that we hold in our congregational life, and one is baptism, which we're able to speak or we're able to experience at different times throughout our year. At the Connection, we celebrate the other sacrament each week, and that's the table. And the table points similarly again to an opportunity to remember how God has revealed himself into the history, or revealed himself into history, into the narrative of life, and to come again and again and experience his faithfulness, his healing, his comfort, his peace bringing, his lordship over all creation. Remember that this is how he acts in creation. This is what makes up his character, and this is how he tells his story in the life of our community, in the life of us partaking of his body and his blood together as his family. Recognizing that his story interweaves with our story as he is doing a good work in our lives and will be faithful to bring it to completion. That he makes himself known in us and through us as we journey together with him. Coming and partaking in the bread and the cup is a time to bring forth our needs, our experiences, the place where we need him to act, and cling to the part of his character that we need him to act in, whether that is healing, comforting, peace-bringing, deliverance, care, and experience that healing touch, that love from our God, who doesn't stay far off, but comes again and again into the narrative of our life. So I invite you tonight to come forward and to celebrate the fullness of God that is revealed in these simple elements, and to experience his spirit that renews and redeems us again and again.